It's Tuesday, January 27th. I'm Jane Coaston, and this is What A Day, the show that is noting that everyone seems to really hate Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem for being a terrible person who is bad at her job. And I, for one, think that's awesome. On today's show, U.S. warships arrive in the Middle East as tensions simmer with Iran. And goodwill is at an all-time high. Not the sentiment, of course, but rather the popular chain of thrift stores. But let's start with Congress and the Department of Homeland Security. It's not often that the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the New York Post all agree on something. But that's what happened after Border Patrol agents fatally shot 37-year-old ICU nurse Alex Preddy in Minneapolis on Saturday. All four publications, with four different ideological priorities, all agree. The Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and Border Patrol have all gone too fucking far. And it appears Americans feel the same way. Here's CNN's poll analyst, Harry Enten, on Monday.
What's going on in Minneapolis is not popular at all. What's been going on during this second term under ICE, under the Trump administration, under Kristi Noem, has very much not been popular, and it's only been getting more and more unpopular.
If you're wondering if this is reaching folks in the GOP, here's a clip from the Monday episode of Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz's podcast, where he says that the real issue with the Trump administration is its tone when it comes to the people federal law enforcement has killed.
Escalating the rhetoric doesn't help, and it actually loses credibility. And so I would encourage the administration to be more measured, to recognize the tragedy and to say we don't want anyone's lives to be lost, and the politicians who are pouring gasoline onto this fire, they need to stop.
Yes, Ted, the issue here is tone. Democrats, on the other hand, are finally taking a stand as ICE and Border Patrol run rampant on American streets. There's a massive funding package making its way through Congress this week. It includes money for DHS, which contains ICE and Border Patrol. And it must pass by Friday for the government to stay completely open. But that's looking less and less likely. After Preddy's killing, Senate Democrats and their allies are saying that they are willing to risk another shutdown to demand policy changes. Here's Maine Independent Senator Angus King on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday.
I hate shutdowns. I'm one of the people that helped negotiate the solution to the end of the last shutdown. But I can't vote for a bill that includes ICE funding under these circumstances. What they're doing in my state, what we saw yesterday in Minneapolis, there's an easy way out, by the way. Leader Thune could separate, which is what they did in the House, separate the five other appropriation bills, put them on the floor. They would pass, I think, overwhelmingly.
So to talk more about Homeland Security, a potential shutdown, and what Democrats in Congress can do to stop ICE, I spoke to Maryland Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin. Congressman Raskin, welcome back to What A Day.
I'm psyched to be with you guys.
The House has already passed a funding package. You opposed it. The Senate is set to vote on the final package this Thursday, and with the inclusion of DHS funding, it looks unlikely that they will approve it. Now, I know we've talked about this before. A lot of federal government employees live in your district. Can they take another government shutdown?
Well, the whole country suffers in a government shutdown, and my constituents are hit very hard. I've got more than 50,000 who are federal government workers and thousands more who are government contractors. At the same time, my mail and my calls overwhelmingly are running in favor of holding the Trump administration to account for the bloody assault on Minneapolis and the attack on American communities and the attack on the American people. So we're just going to have to fight our way through this until we get through this period of shocking authoritarianism and lawlessness.
What I'm worried about is that even if the government shuts down at midnight on Friday, a source in GOP leadership told NBC News that immigration and customs enforcement operations would not stop. The agents would just stop being paid. So in your view, is shutting down the government worth it?
Well, the people of Minnesota and Minneapolis have shown us that what we're going to need to turn this around is massive popular organizing, a general strike, and implacable opposition to authoritarian tactics. And so we have to use every means at our disposal in order to do that. And there will be many hard days ahead of us, no doubt. But we're going to get through it. The president's poll numbers are plummeting. The whole popularity of the Republican Party is sinking, and the country is beginning to unify around the defense of constitutional values and principles across the board. I think larger numbers of Second Amendment advocates are denouncing the killing of Alex Pretty. He was disarmed. His weapon was removed from him. He never brandished his weapon. He never reached for his weapon, but they took his weapon and then they killed him, shooting him 10 times. So it's a massive assault, not just on the First Amendment, but on the Second Amendment, as well as the Fifth Amendment, which says that none of us can be deprived of life, liberty, property without due process of law. And these masked anonymous ICE agents are acting like police officers, which they're not, prosecutors, which they're not, judges and juries, which they're not, and then executioners, which they're not. But that's certainly what they're acting like.
Yeah, I was struck by that, too, the degree to which the Trump administration has decided that the Second Amendment doesn't matter anymore, or maybe the Second Amendment doesn't apply if you're doing something they don't like. But Senate Democrats reportedly want to remove the DHS funding bill from the package of bills they're voting on Thursday, which could send the whole thing back to the House to you for approval. So if this bill comes back to the House, what needs to change for you to support a DHS funding bill?
There would need to be extremely dramatic and draconian restrictions on the power of ICE. We got to take the masks off. We need officers to be identified. We need them to be wearing body cameras. We need them to withdraw the guidance that they somehow can circumnavigate the Fourth Amendment. There can only be entries into people's houses based on probable cause contained in search warrants issued by judicial magistrates, not by administrative officers. There must be whole new policies against the use of violence against our people. So, you know, there's lots of federal legislation that we've put in, and it's very clear that we would need a sweeping overhaul of ICE's actions before we would go forward. And at this point, it is a menace and a danger to the American people.
Americans have been protesting ICE operations for months. I mean, we saw it in Los Angeles, we've seen it in Chicago, we've seen it in DC, pretty much everywhere, even before the most recent killings in Minneapolis. You are a ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. Is the House doing anything to investigate the increasingly more violent actions of federal immigration officers?
Well, the House Judiciary Democrats, albeit we're in the minority, but we've been doing a lot. We have been engaged in investigation of all of the violence and all of the killings. Recently, the chair of our subcommittee on immigration, Pramila Jayapal, led 25 members out to Minneapolis in the wake of the killing of Renee Good to conduct a hearing to collect testimony. Now, all of which is to say, no, the House Judiciary Committee majority is not doing anything to investigate ICE or Homeland Security or to try to put the brakes on this reign of terror. But the House Democrats are completely undaunted, and our subcommittee on immigration has been super active, and the whole committee has been very engaged with this process of trying to rein in ICE and Homeland Security and to get the Department of Justice to do its job.
Representative, I'm going to put my cards on the table and say that I don't think ICE should exist. I don't think that the Department of Homeland Security should exist. They were both formed in 2003 in the wake of 9/11, and I think that they are part of the militarization of policing that we've seen in so many examples across the country. Do you think that ICE can be reformed under different leadership?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that question. It's obviously an important question. Again, we're in the minority now, so I wouldn't want to get hung up on that question, since we know the Republicans are going to control that. What I want to focus on now is the reassertion of constitutional rights, liberties, and parameters and constraints that operate against any federal department or agency, no matter what you call it.
to that point, I spend a lot of time reading conservative media, and it's been interesting the degree to which they have given up on Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. And I know that there's been a push within the House to impeach Kristi Noem. Where do you stand on that effort, and what would be the next steps?
Well, I'm all for using impeachment against all of these cabinet officials and even Donald Trump for their impeachable high crimes and misdemeanors. As you know, I was the lead impeachment manager against Trump in the second impeachment trial that took place when he incited a violent insurrection to accompany his attempted political coup against the United States. So I don't think we should be afraid for a moment to use the impeachment vehicle. But again, I don't believe in false hope. We don't have any support for Republicans for that at this point. That doesn't mean we can't bring it up. We've brought up impeachment on the floor multiple times, and its fate has been consistent. So the critical thing is to see impeachment as part of a panoply of options that we can talk about, that we can do public education about, that we can try to push as far as we go, understanding that right now the Republicans are in control, and the critical thing is for us to win back the House of Representatives. We impeached Donald Trump, and we got Republican votes for it, for inciting violent insurrection against the Union. We impeached him for his Ukraine shakedown. We brought both of those to trial. In the one that I led, we had a 57-43 vote in the Senate, which was the most sweeping bipartisan vote to convict a president in American history of the four impeachment trials there have been. So we're serious about it. And as the lead Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, I will take it very seriously. But people do need to understand we're still in the minority, which is why we are fighting to take back the Congress.
I know that you're still in the minority, but you're seeing Americans taking to the streets to protest. People are acting and they want to see more action. I know that it must be incredibly frustrating for people to be like, do something, but you're in the minority. So what do you see?
We do something every single day. We're fighting every single day. But sometimes people believe that impeachment is some kind of magic wand. Oh, when you say impeachment, then all bets are off. But what we can do is we can conduct, even in the minority, we can create our own impeachment hearings on impeachable offenses against the Republic, high crimes and misdemeanors being committed by Secretary Noem, being committed by Attorney General Bondi, being committed by Donald Trump. We can take it out to the country and we can build public education and understanding around it. But I just don't want anybody to think that, oh, well, we don't need to worry about taking back Congress because we can just impeach Donald Trump. Like, let's not lose the focus that we need to be in the driver's seat in the House and the Senate for legislation, for oversight, for impeachment, for everything.
Congressman Raskin, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for what you do every single day. You are not the enemy of the people. You're the people's best friend. So thank you for continuing to fight with us.
Thank you. That was my conversation with Maryland Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin. We've got way more for you, but if you're enjoying what you're hearing, subscribe and share with your friends, and who knows, maybe even leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. And watch us on YouTube, too. More to come after some ads. What a Day is brought to you by Nutrafol. Resolutions come and go, but growth, real, lasting growth, takes time. That's why I love that Nutrafol isn't promising a miracle in 30 days. They're here to help you grow your hair and confidence from within, one day at a time. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. Nutrafol has multiple formulations designed to target the many root causes of thinning, like stress and hormones, as they evolve throughout different life stages and lifestyles, such as from post-childbirth to menopause, giving your body what it needs to grow. Nutrafol supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF content certified, and clinically tested to measure results in growth, quality, and strength, helping you reach your hair goals with confidence. See thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code WAD. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code WAD. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code WAD. What a Day is brought to you by Quince. Starting the year with a wardrobe refresh, Quince has you covered with luxe essentials that feel effortless and look polished. They're perfect for layering, mixing, and building a wardrobe that lasts. Their versatile styles make it easy to reach for them day after day. Quince has all the staples covered, from soft Mongolian cashmere sweaters that feel like designer pieces without the markup, to 100% silk tops and skirts for easy dressing up, to perfectly cut denim for everyday wear. Their wardrobe essentials are crafted to last season after season. And the quality shows in every detail. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics, every piece is thoughtfully designed to be your new wardrobe essential. And like everything from Quince, each piece is made with premium materials in ethical, trusted factories, then priced far below what other luxury brands charge. I love my Quince cashmere sweaters. I could wear them every day of the week, and they just get better over time. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/wad for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/wad to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/wad. Here's what else we're following today.
Headlines.
Today, I announced the end of my campaign. I have two primary reasons for this decision. Number one, I cannot support the National Republican stated retribution on the citizens of our state, nor can I count myself a member of a party that would do so.
Minnesota Republican gubernatorial candidate Chris Maddle abruptly ended his 2026 campaign on Monday, calling immigration enforcement in his state a, quote, unmitigated disaster. Maddle said not only had ICE deviated from deporting the worst of the worst, but also that the tactics have sown fear among citizens of color. So Maddle and his conscience can rest easy at night. Unlike some of his GOP rivals in Minnesota, like MyPillow founder Mike Lindell, not only because Lindell literally sleeps on his own product, but also because he's been totally silent on ICE. But Maddle isn't exactly alone. A new Politico poll finds nearly half of Americans say Trump's mass deportation campaign is too aggressive. That includes about one in five people who voted for him in 2024. And notably, one in three Trump voters support the idea of mass deportation, but don't like the way he's doing it. What exactly did you think mass deportation meant? Papers? Vibes? U.S. warships arrived in the Middle East on Monday, and Iran is warning that any American strike could mean all-out war. U.S. defense officials confirmed Monday that the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier and several destroyers have reached the region. This is all part of a growing U.S. military buildup as President Trump weighs potential strikes on Iran following the regime's deadly crackdown on nationwide protests. More U.S. military assets are expected to arrive in the coming days, giving Trump a wider range of options. Iran, for its part, has placed its forces on high alert, and according to an Iranian official, is preparing for, quote, a worst-case scenario. Iran warned that even a limited U.S. attack would warrant retaliation far more severe than during last summer's conflict with Israel. But not to worry. If things get too hot, I'm sure Trump's Board of Peace can step in to clear up any misunderstandings. For a price.
I am pleased to announce to the citizens of Israel, to the people of Israel, that I've just informed the Gavili family that our forces have found Rani, and he is currently on his way home. This is an extraordinary achievement for the state of Israel. I promised, to bring everyone back. We brought them all back, down to the very last one.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told reporters Monday that Israel had recovered the remains of the last hostage in Gaza. The interpretation you just heard is from Reuters. Netanyahu said Ron Gavili, who was killed in the October 7th attack, was among the first to be taken into Gaza. The announcement clears the way for the next step of Israel's ceasefire with Hamas, which would likely mean the reopening of Gaza's border with Egypt. Netanyahu's office said in a tweet that, as part of President Trump's 20-point plan, Israel had agreed to a limited reopening of the Rafah crossing for pedestrian passage only. It has largely been closed since 2024. Reopening the crossing would make it easier for Gazans to seek medical treatment, travel internationally, or visit family in Egypt. It would also help Gaza's devastated economy. Goodwill stores are breaking revenue records. Goodwill Industries said it surpassed $7 billion in revenue from its 3,400 stores in 2025, according to reporting from the New York Times. That's up roughly 7% from the previous year. Goodwill's chief executive, Stephen C. Preston, told The Times that Goodwill stores usually hold their own no matter the economic situation, adding, quote, but when things are tight, we're probably more likely to get that foot traffic. So what I'm hearing is record revenue is good for goodwill, but indicates possible economic uncertainty among the American public. The NYT says more frugal, environmentally friendly generations are largely responsible for the boost. Of course, we're talking about Gen Zers and millennials who have found a hobby in thrifting secondhand clothes. Just take a scroll on TikTok if you want to see an early 2000s haul and feel the cold grip of age take your bones. And that's the news. One more thing. Minnesota has borne the brunt of the Trump administration's deportation regime for the last few weeks. And among those who have suffered the most are kids. Because it's their classmates who are being detained, their bus stops being circled by federal agents, their parents who are being taken away. Not to mention that they're being targeted for deportation themselves. Monica Byron is the president of Education Minnesota, the union representing teachers and educators across the state. We spoke about how teachers are handling the aftermath and what she wants you to know about what's happening in Minnesota. Monica, welcome to Why Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know this is a massive question, but what's it been like working in Minneapolis schools right now? What are teachers and students experiencing day to day?
That is a massive question. I will say that our educators from Minneapolis to across our state are experiencing a lot of anxiety, some fear, but at the end of the day, our educators are showing up. They're doing what they need to do so that our students and our communities and our families are safe.
You said in a statement that, quote, no child can learn when they're terrified of masked men with guns roaming their neighborhoods, circling their schools, and stalking their bus stops. What are educators seeing in schools right now with regards to student attendance, behavior, emotional well-being? Because you're working with kindergartners, you're working with high schoolers, with all of this happening. What is that looking like?
Yeah, so we're getting reports from our educators that students are quiet, and these are the students that are showing up because our educators are walking into empty classrooms. There's a lot of students and families that are fearful. One example I give you, if you've ever been to a middle school and you've heard those wonderful middle schoolers in the hallways, you know that it's pretty loud, it's boisterous, and right now, our hallways are quiet. Our classrooms are quiet. And that's just not right, especially from our middle schoolers that should be really kind of coming into their own. But they're scared. They don't know what tomorrow will bring for them or their classmates or their communities. So our educators are just trying to deal with the realities that are being presented to them right now.
I know that after the fatal shooting of Renee Good, officials said that the Minneapolis school system would give students the option of remote learning for a month. What has that experience of remote learning been like, where you have so many kids who are at home because they're terrified to leave?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've got school districts that are offering remote learning, and they're doing it on a voluntary basis. So it's kind of a hybrid system that's happening. Some of the schools, you know, are having to close down for a day or two so that they can get a system in place. But it means that our teachers and our education support professionals are having to pivot all their lessons, all the curriculum, so that they can try and engage students and meet them wherever they're at. But it also means getting devices. It means so many things other than just, you know, flipping on that switch and going to remote learning. We have to make sure that our students have access, which presents a whole nother dilemma for our families that are scared and won't come to schools to get them, rightfully so. But it's another piece. But it is an option that we have, thankfully, and many districts are choosing to offer that for our families.
I know that many people listening have seen so many videos, they've seen so many TikToks, they've heard so many stories, but what do you think is most important for people outside of Minneapolis, outside of Minnesota, to know about what's happening to schools and to children in Minnesota right now?
What you're seeing is just a small piece of the reality that's happening. It is happening all over our communities. And the tactics that are being used are changing every day. So it's not just ICE vehicles following, you know, a car and pulling them over. It's agents showing up and knocking on doors and asking for directions to try and create this ruse that, you know, we are just a community member that needs help. And then they'll run into the house. It's so horrible what's happening because our communities are having to respond in real time to attacks, to our children being used as bait. And the bottom line is, if you're a person of color, you can be picked up in this state right now, and it doesn't matter because they're not following any rules right now.
Monica, thank you so much for joining me, and stay safe.
Thank you so much.
That was my conversation with Monica Byron, president of Education Minnesota. Before we go, Crooked Media's newest book, Hated by All the Right People, Tucker Carlson and the Unraveling of the Conservative Mind, is out now. It's by one of our favorite political journalists, New York Times Magazine writer Jason Zengerle. In Hated by All the Right People, Jason Zengerle gives a fascinating, informative look at Tucker's political evolution and how his rise traces the rise of the MAGA movement. It got a glowing review in the Washington Post from critic Becca Rothfeld. Quote, "Mordant, insightful, vigorously reported and yes, deliciously entertaining, Hated by All the Right People is as much a work of media criticism as it is a professional biography of Carlson. And Zengerle chronicles how first television, then the internet, started to reward extremes, privileging provocation and punditry over somber fact-finding." It's also featured in this week's New Yorker in print and online, where Jason is now a staff writer. Get your copy and check out Jason's book signing tour dates now by heading to crooked.com/books. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, contemplate that Fox News host Sean Hannity also thinks ICE has gone too far. Sort of. And tell your friends to listen. And if you're into reading, and not just about how Hannity said on his radio show Monday that obviously he thinks ICE is great, but also, quote, "Now is ICE perfect? They're not. Can they do a better job? They can. So I think that, you know, some of the optics at times, do I think that going into Home Depots and arresting people there is a good idea? I don't. Like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin. And look, for Sean Hannity, that constitutes bravery. Timu bravery. What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Desmond Taylor. Our associate producers are Emily Foer and Chris Allport. Our producer is Caitlin Plummer. Our video editor is Joseph Tutra. Our video producer is Johanna Case. We had a production help today from Ethan Oberman, Greg Walters, and Matt Burke. Our senior producer is Erica Morrison, and our senior vice president of news and politics is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Kyle Murdoch and Jordan Cantor. We had help today from the Associated Press. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino, America's social casino.